Welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that talks strictly about hockey. We're going to get into this right away, folks. We've got a big, big show tonight. Happy to welcome one of Manitoba's best here on the show tonight as we fade out Blind Melon. Going to have Delaney Bryan on the show. We did a pre-record with her earlier this week. Had a great, great chat with her. So it's going to be a bit of a longer than normal, about 2 minutes longer than normal. But going to get this on right now for you, right for all of our fans here. If you have any questions, any comments after the show, make sure you hit up Twitter at TeamsHPIC. We can talk there. But here is Delaney Bryan earlier this week talking with me about everything going on in her life on the Hockey Show. Proud, honored, privileged, and humbled to welcome one of Manitoba's best players to the show. She's a Clarkson Cup champion. She's a Clarkson Cup MVP, was named the league's best netminder, a silver medalist at the Under-18 Women's World Championship, a 2013 World Women's Ball Hockey Champion, and a 2015 ISBHF World Street Hockey Champion. Needless to say, she's got tons of accolades, a pile of precious metal that she's going to be able to talk about here. I should also mention she gives time back to the community through charitable efforts and helps the next generation of hockey players by working at various hockey camps and teaching the next generation to play like her. It is with great honor that we welcome former professional goaltender and a Manitoban, Delaney Bryan, to the show. How are you, Delaney?
I'm good, thanks. Happy to be here.
All right. Obviously, we're proud and kind of honored to have you here because first time we've ever gotten to chat with you, being that you're a Manitoban. But first off, let's clean up some of the stuff we've missed. Happy belated birthday as well.
Thank you. It's just there's nothing after 25. That's about the last thing. You can rent a car, so.
That's okay. So happy 25th birthday again, then. That's all right. So let's get started at the beginning of your story. When Dave and Sylvia, along with your brothers Dana and David, welcomed a bundle of joy named Delaney to the household on July 24th, 1990. What was childhood like for Delaney Bryan as she grew up?
It was good. It was busy. My mom had me in pretty much everything she could sign me up for. I don't want to say unfortunately, but that does include things like baton and tap dance and all that stuff. So, I had two older brothers, so obviously they played hockey and I didn't have much of a choice. They needed something to shoot at, so that made me the goalie of the family. I don't know, I was into football for a long time. They also played football and lacrosse, and so I got injured, and then being injured from lacrosse made it so that I had to miss some hockey. So I kind of had to make a tough decision when I was 14 or 15 and stuck with hockey from then on.
So, I mean, not a late start to hockey. Obviously, like you said, you were, you know, stopping pucks and balls and whatever else for your brothers and everything like that. When did you first sort of hit the ice as an actual, like, player in terms of getting onto the ice as a hockey player?
I was about seven when I started playing in net. Been a while.
That's okay. A lot of good experiences there. Were there other sports, other activities that you participated in that obviously you said lacrosse, baton, that kind of stuff or whatever, but that you really sort of excelled in as well?
My biggest one besides hockey, I guess, growing up was lacrosse. Okay. I didn't play in net for that because it's a whole different world. Like, the net's smaller, the chest protectors are bigger, and you're wearing pretty much player shin pads. And the ball just goes in every which direction. My team would always think that I would be a lot better in net than I actually was because I was a hockey goalie, but it just didn't really translate for me. So, and I did like to get kind of, I was in net, so, and I played boys hockey, so I didn't get to hit with the boys because I was in the crease. So it helped that I could go hit them out on the lacrosse, in the rink there.
That's all right then. Nothing wrong with a little physicality in terms of laying out the boys there. Things really started to get serious for you, I guess, and maybe it was earlier than this, but it seemed to be when you packed up and headed west to join the Notre Dame Hounds, where again, you really sort of blossomed into what we know today. What do you remember most about your time at the Saskatchewan school?
Yeah, I actually went to Warner first for my grade 11 year.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then there just wasn't really the, like, there wasn't AAA as far as midget hockey went for women in Manitoba yet at that time. So I kind of wanted to to see what other competition there was, I guess. So then I went to Warner and ended up going to Notre Dame for my grade 12 year. I had friends, other Manitobans. Chelsea Karpenko went there for, I don't know, four or five years. So she had nothing but good things to say about it. So it's different. You're in, for both those places, you're in a tiny little town, and pretty much all there is the school, and that's what the town kind of pretty much is the main focus of the town is the sport. So it was nice in that sense that the rink, it wasn't huge, but it was full for all the games, and you got into that kind of college atmosphere with going to the men's games and the other sports. As far as Notre Dame went, they had football and stuff as well. So it was cool. It was pretty small town. Sometimes you just kind of miss the city, but as far as development went, I think it was a good decision for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, things seemed to go really well for you. Your senior year there, you posted a 1.25 goals against average, 17 wins, 6 shutouts in the regular season while going 9-2 in the playoffs, 192 goals against average, 3 more shutouts in the postseason. You helped Notre Dame win the league championship and a Western Shield, which, hey, I mean, take nothing away, that's a phenomenal achievement right there. A pretty good year by really any standard, though. So what made that senior year for you so special when you look at all that you accomplished?
Yeah, like I said, I went, there was a couple other Manitobans there. There was, Katie Wilson was there with me. She's a year younger, but she was there, and Chelsea Karpenko, I played with her since I was 9 years old on a team that used to be called the Junior Jets before, obviously, the modern day Jets came back.
Right.
And we were on that team. It was just a summer team, but we were 9, and, we were on the team with, some guys that ended up in the NHL and stuff like that. So it was nice to be able to play with her again. And then obviously just kind of ramping up, getting ready for college. So it was, like I said, it was a great atmosphere in preparing to do so for that.
So you clearly impressed the right people, I'll say, at least in the hockey world. You suited up for both Manitoba and the 2007 Canada Games, where you ended up as a finalist. But you also went as part of Team Canada to the inaugural entry at the IIHF Under-18 Women's World Hockey Championship, where you helped Canada win a silver medal. How much fun were those tournaments for you, and what do you remember most from them?
It's a little surreal at the time, obviously. Just looking back at the roster now, it's like half of the team that I was on was the Olympic team this year. So,
yes, yeah.
just looking back at that and how young we all were, like, obviously, Pauline was on our team. She was a year younger than most of us were on the team as well. But it was just a surreal experience. Obviously, you grew up wanting to put the jersey on, so being able to do so was awesome. It was an honor.
So, I mean, again, not taking anything away from what you've done, obviously, but Notre Dame is a monster school when it comes to the hockey world. Everybody seems to know of Notre Dame in some way or shape or form. How did you end up then choosing Wayne State out of various different schools that may have come to talk to you? Were there other schools that came to talk to you?
Yeah, it's if you look at it, it's kind of a weird one to choose. But when I was looking at them, the head coach was my assistant coach for the Under-18 Team Canada. Better.
Yeah.
So we obviously had that relationship and that rapport. So he was looking at getting me in. And then at that time, Wayne State was ranked 10th nationally in all the polls. So they were a great team. They had the top 3 scorers in the entire NCAA at the time with Lindsay DiPietro, Melissa Bull, and Sam Poyton. Mm-hmm. And they had their goalies graduating, so it was kind of an opportunity for me to go in with 2 other fresh goalies and try to make a run for the starter. So for the time, it was just a decision that I went with. I went, obviously, I I was trying to get the best scholarship I could so my parents didn't have to pay anything out of pocket.
Yeah,
so,
that's all right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was just the best decision for me and my family.
So, I mean, again, you don't have to name names. You can just say no, next question. But were there other schools that came knocking on your door and said, we want you?
Yeah, there was, I think, probably the closest one I would have gone to other than that was Brown.
Okay.
Being an Ivy League school, they don't do full scholarships. I could have gotten pretty close, but I just, like, again, I didn't want my parents having to, you know, like, go like women's expensive growing up. I kind of wanted to not have to worry about it anymore. I went on a fly down to Niagara. Now not a school, just as well as Wayne said. Or not, shouldn't say not a school. It's not a women's program anymore.
Yeah.
I think those are the only two fly downs I went on. My grade 11 year, I did a lot of speaking to other coaches and stuff like that, and Northeastern was one that I didn't get the chance to fly down on, but I was speaking with them a lot. But other than that, no, it was just kind of went to those couple schools and made my decision from there.
Well, that's all right then. I mean, again, nothing wrong with that. I mean, you, as you were saying, there was a chance to grab a starter spot, which seems you did out in Wayne State. You played well enough to convince everybody you should be a starter. October 3rd, 2008, saw you get your first start in the NCAA, but it would be October 18th that should stand out. Do you remember what happened that night?
That'd be my first win.
That would be your first win. Do you remember who was against?
It was either Vermont was my first shutout,
that,
I think.
That is correct. We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay. I'm not sure. It might have been Bemidji.
It was on the road against Union.
Union, okay.
So, I mean, pretty big night in terms of getting your first win there. As you mentioned, though, Vermont was your first shutout. November 8th would be that that date when that happened. So a couple of big sort of moments there early on in your career as you, as I said, you sort of grabbed the starting reins and ran with it. What's it like sort of jumping in? Like, do nerves creep in that on that October 3rd night where you're like, oh, man, I don't know if I can do this? Or like, how's your reaction to getting the starting call early on in the year?
Yeah, there were nerves for sure because, just like I said, they were ranked so high the season before, and then obviously going into that season, especially with still having the top three scorers. There weren't a lot of games my first couple of years that I had to make a ton of saves per game. So for most goalies, that's kind of harder to stay in those games and perform well. You kind of prefer to have the 30, 40, 50 shot games, but yeah, it was a little shaky, I guess, for my first little while. But no, I was definitely happy to get the starting position and kind of cherished every chance I got. And then
I'm gonna say that that's a bit of a lie. I mean, maybe the early on, the first month, maybe a little shaky, but I'm gonna say it's a lie that you were shaking your freshman season because you went 15-6-0 and ended up two wins shy of Valerie Turcotte's school record of 17 wins. So maybe not quite as shaky as you think, but you helped the Warriors get to the playoffs where you'd be part of a record-setting night on March 6th. Do you recall what happened that night?
Was that the longest game in the Wayne State?
It's longest game in school history and CHA history, yeah.
Okay, and I was playing against Blue McLaughlin on the other end, who ended up coaching me later on.
That is correct, and Robert Morris, you are right. It's a 4-3 overtime game. What do you recall from that game that sort of stood out as you guys went into, like, I think it was triple overtime that night?
Yeah, it was actually my roommate who scored the overtime goal, and I wasn't sure if she scored before that, so I was just really excited for her. To get that, and then obviously just being such an important goal for the team and for herself, it was just exciting, really.
That, I mean, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, we've had some long games here in Manitoba as well, but I mean, yeah, those overtime games are just, they're a little heart-stopping sometimes. Next couple of seasons with Wayne State, saw you play just as well. Team never quite reached the same heights they did in your freshman year, but in 2010-2011, you led the CHA with a .921 save percentage, and you were second in the nation for total saves made. After starting every single game, though, not every single game. I mean, you did that sort of in the final season with 2010-2011 there. But After starting sort of, you know, the majority of the games for Wayne State over those 3 years, everything sort of came to a grinding halt. How was the announcement made that Wayne State was dissolving the women's program? How was it delivered? And, you know, was there any sort of indication given to you guys that this could be a reality?
Yeah, not at all, actually. It was quite the shocker. I actually was staying throughout the summer to take some summer credits that year. So between my junior and senior year, I was staying that summer. And there was a group of us, so we had just finished one of our spring workouts. I believe it was kind of mid-May. And after one of our workouts, Jim Fetter, our head coach, called us into a room and told us the news. So it was quite a shocker, actually. We had to end up telling all the girls that we're at home for the summer as well. So it wasn't great. Still a little bitter about it, to be honest. But it is what it is. I ended up going to a different school and experiencing a whole other dynamic as far as campus and people and programs. So can't say that I'm too upset. I still actually got that opportunity, but it could have definitely been delivered a little bit better, but it is what it is, I guess.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, after seeing what happened with North Dakota, I mean, it seems like, and again, I'm not trying to compare the two. Certainly, they're two different situations depending on what's going on, but it seems like administration just bumbles these entire, I mean, again, it's the roughest news you're going to deliver to 22, 25, 20, you know, 30 women in their entire life, possibly. And they just seem to bumble it every time they get an opportunity to do that. Like, I don't know if there's a solution, if there's a resolution that they can find that would make anything easier to take. Obviously it's hard, but I mean, how do you even manage that as a student that going, well, everything I'm doing now, especially for you when you were in the weight room, you know, earlier in the day, what do I do now?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was the time that they did it too. It was May. So by May for the following season, they have all the other teams have kind of their roster set, or for the most part, and especially all their scholarship money is taken up. All their goalies positions specifically are taken up. So we were kind of left high and dry as far as the following season went. So I think maybe if they would have given us another season or told us at the beginning of the season so we could kind of get our ducks in a row before May or June, I think that would have been a little bit easier. It would have been hard to play a season knowing that it was your last one, I think. But I think it would have left all the girls in a better situation overall.
Well, and I mean, you said you guys were, you know, essentially assigned the task of telling everybody else. I mean, I can't imagine the amount of tears that were shed over the phone that day or those days.
Yeah, definitely. We actually, our captain tried doing like an online poll, like a petition and all that stuff. So it was still a little bit hopeful because there's, I don't know, remember what the bill is. I think it's Bill 9 or something like that, where colleges have to have the same amount of women's teams as men's teams. Yeah. And by dropping us, they were going under that. So we were trying to fight it a little bit in that sense, but we were unsuccessful, unfortunately.
No, and I mean, you know, Title IX stuff is still in the courts now with North Dakota. They're trying to push for the same idea in terms of discrimination. So I totally understand where you guys are coming from in terms of getting that going. I just think that, again, hearing the story of how it was bumbled and how it was, you know, messed up, that, like, that, to me, it's like, I don't know if any of these administrators should be in charge of anything anymore, but that's besides the point. You did go, as you said, though, to another college. After spending a year in sort of NCAA transfer purgatory, you finally got the clearance to suit up for the Robert Morris Colonials, who, again, you set the record against for the longest game. In 2012-2013, you went 2-2-0, with a .297 goals against average and an .869 save percentage. Is it tough for you as a goaltender, especially as a starting goaltender for Wayne State, is it tough to adjust to Division I hockey again after being off for a full year and jump back into it at the same level?
I actually ended up, going to Robert Morris specifically because my goalie coach, Allison Rutledge from Wayne State, actually went to Robert Morris the next season.
Yeah.
And she was awesome. We had a great relationship. So she was kind of trying to get me to come over. And so I actually went at Christmas time the year before and redshirted for that half season. So I still got to practice with the team and be around the team for that one, winter semester. So I was there for for them winning the league title that year. And then, but yeah, so kind of all that year, I was working towards hopefully getting back into the net the following season. And I did. I got my chances, but it just, I don't know, wasn't the same. There was obviously a great great competition in Kristen DeChoco. She was unreal that year. So as much as you want to be in the net, you also want what's best for the team, and she was that. So at that point, you just have to be a good teammate, right? So
yeah, no.
And obviously, I was just happy to have that opportunity in the first place, being able to finish out my eligibility and get my education still paid for. So couldn't really complain in that sense.
You all right?
Yeah. So that was kind of the main reason that I wanted to keep playing after college, is I didn't really want to end up on that note.
Well, I mean, are you all right now? Like,
yeah, just. I'm a big wuss. So
I know, that's what I mean. I can hear the emotion, so that's why I was like, this kind of, I don't really want to dig too deep and make you cry or anything, but let's get to the good stuff then, because that year kind of kicked off a bunch of good stuff for you. It wasn't the greatest year, as you said, in the net for your last year in the NCAA, but you did get your degree. You got a BA in Applied Psychology, which, again, congratulations on completing your degree. You had been named a CHA All-Academic in 2010 as well, so obviously things were going well that way. And then something big happened in 2013 where a specific Calgary-based team decided that you were going to be their solution, hopefully one of their solutions at solving their goaltending woes, as the Inferno drafted you sixth overall in 2013. How exciting is it to know that there's life after college hockey?
Yeah, and exactly. Like I said, I didn't want to kind of end on a sour note, I guess. I wanted to keep seeing if I could compete at a higher level. And I knew this Calgary team existed because one of my old teammates from Wayne State was playing on it, Emily Berzins. So she was here in Calgary, and I contacted her and asked for the coach's email, who, it was Tim Boswell at the time, and he also was one of my assistant coaches for my U18 Team Canada, so I was familiar with him. Contacted him, and yeah, it was kind of, Calgary was my choice from there on. Like I said, I went to school in Warner in my grade 11 year, and anytime I could be around the mountains, I was happy. I'm still in awe anytime I go anywhere near them. So, yeah, it was just if they were willing to have me, I was willing to come out this way. So that's how it turned out.
So before we dig into year one of professional hockey, you had some other business that you were tending to in 2013, namely the 2013 World Women's Ball Hockey Championship, where you and Team Canada went on to win gold. But the question that I have for you comes from the stats portion of it, because I read that Canada outscored the competition 56-1 in this tournament.
Yeah.
The only goal that was scored was by the Swiss in a 15-1 drubbing in the quarterfinals. So I got to ask, was it you or Katie Passfield who surrendered that lone goal in the tournament?
It was not me. And it wasn't kind of bad for her, but it was one of those ones where you go to play the puck and kind of miss it completely.
Oh, no.
The ball, I guess. So that's how that one went in.
So, I mean, huge tournament for you guys, though. I mean, how did that come about that you got into the ball hockey scene? And then secondly, going to gold and winning everything.
Yeah, I actually started playing ball hockey after my freshman year at Wayne State. I started playing in Winnipeg. So I was playing on a team out of Glenview Arena.
Yeah.
With players like Addie Miles and Brenna Leary and all those girls that played on U of M, and all those girls I knew from growing up. They got me into playing in net, and then so I guess our first nationals were in Manitoba that year, so that's why they kind of tried so hard to get a Manitoba team. And I ended up loving it. Like, you, even if you're standing there and not getting any shots, when you're in net, you're still just dripping. Like, it's pretty steamy in that chest protector.
Yeah.
But no, we ended up, so we played nationals with Team Manitoba, and we ended up finishing second. That was also in after an overtime, and then ended up in a shootout. we got to play at the MTS Center.
Nice.
So it was an awesome, tournament. And then kind of just fell in love with it from there and kind of went to every nationals that I could since then. And the nationals are where Canada scouts from. So I had a pretty good tournament in Manitoba that year. So I guess Canada took notice. And I actually ended up going on the 2011 team. We went to Bratislava in Slovakia.
Yeah.
I wasn't the starter there, but we ended up finishing second. I think that one, it was just a 1-0 game in the final against Slovakia. And so I, after that, I wasn't sure if I wanted to kind of spend all that money to go do another one if I was ever asked. But they asked, and we were in, it was in Canada, so it was obviously a little bit cheaper for us to go. And I'd already been to, what is it, St. John's? For nationals the year before, so I knew it was a great place, and I wanted to kind of have a chance to redeem myself with the Canada jersey again. So when I got that opportunity, I kind of tried to make the best with it. So it was awesome that we won. It was with the same coach as previous, so just having that opportunity was unreal.
So not a lot of people know this, I think, but Slovakia is actually a powerhouse in ball hockey. Is that true?
They are, yeah. They have pro leagues and everything out there. And the goalie that we were playing against, can't remember her name right now, but she does play for Slovakia did make the Olympics, but at Worlds and stuff like that. So she played up at Midgey as well. I can't remember her name. Tomčíková, that's her last name. Anyway, okay. she was a great goalie playing against her all growing up. She was really good at ball hockey too, so. But yeah, they apparently have pro leagues and everything out there, so they're definitely one of the top teams every year.
That's awesome. I mean, maybe there's future in that if you want to get into something new, I guess. I mean, kind of cool to see what's going on there. But that's a big one. You came back though after that summer, after winning gold and celebrating and enjoying your summer, to play your first professional season with the Inferno, where you went 8-5-1 with a .252 goals against average. Now, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question already, and you can certainly laugh at me and just move on with it if you want. But did you feel like you belonged alongside some of the biggest names in women's hockey after that first season?
Our team, like, if you looked at our roster that year compared to all the other ones, and especially since it was an Olympic year, and after the Olympics, we didn't get Mickelson back, we didn't get Watchhorn was in our program, and LaRock actually was in our program as well, Manitoba girl.
Yeah.
We didn't get any of those girls back, so we had a great season as far as our program went, because I don't think they'd had a winning season before that. So just being able to be a part of that and getting to the playoffs for the first time was something to be proud of. And then obviously by the playoffs, all the other Olympians went back to their teams except for ours. So we didn't do too terribly in the playoffs. So I think it was just a proud moment for the program. And Brenda Andress, the commissioner of the CWHL, actually just like came in after the games and told us how proud she was of us. So just to be a part of that was something special.
The next year, you decided to go off and win just about everything there was to win. You were named an All-Star in 2014-2015. You were named the CWHL Goalie of the Year in 2014. Pretty sure that's a couple big honors there for you. Looking at that whole next couple of seasons in 2014-2015, did you see the growth in terms of how well Calgary was moving forward? Because it seemed like you guys were just on the precipice of being incredible.
Yeah, definitely. After the first season, we started getting some bigger names, obviously. It helped that Hockey Canada centralized in Calgary.
Yeah.
So there were girls that, even if they weren't in the running, really, if they were being looked at least they had the chance to show themselves every home game, at least in front of Mel and everyone in Hockey Canada. So just having that here was obviously helpful in recruiting girls out here. So first season we got, I think, Irwin and Johnston and some goal scoring types. So having those girls come was awesome as far as obviously in net, you want to be a huge part of it. But if you're getting people scoring goals, it takes a little bit of the pressure off your shoulders. So, and then obviously every year after that, we just continue to improve. it was interesting playing with Wickenheiser because she's 10, 15 years older than most of us. She's someone that you look up to your entire growing up, right? Because she's been there since she was 15. So
yeah.
Just being able to watch her as I'm growing up and then getting to play with her, it all come in full circle was also something special. So, but then there's just the girls that are on the team now, like Brianna Jenner and those girls like that. It's an honor just to play beside them, I guess, and keeping the competitive hockey going. It's great.
So take nothing away from, like you were saying, you know, Wick and all the players that have been there before. Obviously pretty surreal just sort of, you know, watching them on TV and then standing beside them as well. But does it help you? Like, I know they, you know, legendary work ethic, legendary sort of demands on themselves to be better, to excel, to do all this stuff. Does it force you to be a better player and certainly, you know, push yourself harder mm-hmm. when you see those players demanding more of themselves?
It does. And I don't want to take anything away from our Team Canada girls, but that's pretty much all they're doing. It's like, they might have like a side job besides that, but they're basically getting some, I'm not saying they're getting a ton of money, but they're getting a little bit of money to live while they can train and get on the ice. It's the girls that aren't in the Canada program that impress me the most.
Yeah.
Like we have Jackie Curry, who's she's an engineer. Well, she's also retired now, but just the work ethic in those girls, because they go do their, I was doing for a couple years as well, but just going and doing that full-time job and then still trying to find the energy to train and practice around that, it's mostly those girls that that kind of give you the extra motivation. And I've heard even the Canada girls say that about the girls that are non-Team Canada, that it's the ones with the full-time jobs that inspire them the most.
That's awesome. No, I mean, that's mm-hmm. fantastic to hear that, you know, everybody recognizes the hard work that you guys are putting in, especially. I mean, I think it's one of those things that's sort of taken for granted by fans just because we look at it and go, oh, well, they're all professionals. Like, they all know what they're doing sort of thing or whatever. But to hear, you know, the Canadian women sort of, you know, highlight the fact that, you know, yourself, maybe Esposito, maybe, you know, Pierre, who you know, these women who aren't on the Team Canada roster are doing just as much to keep their game at top-notch level, and then a little bit more because they got to go and work these 9-to-5s as well. Like, that's a huge honor. I think one of the things that should be highlighted, but you know, not only by the teams but by the leagues, as to just how much work you guys put into to be elite level hockey players.
Exactly, and obviously since my first season, it's come such a long way. We actually started getting paid a little bit last year. It's nothing to live off of, but it's nice that they are recognizing that it does help to get that little bit extra. But yes, for sure, it's those girls that are the true inspiration to me as far as our league and the development goes.
So 2015 was sort of your coming out party professionally, both I'm going to say on the court and on the ice. 2015 saw you go to Switzerland, where you won the ISBHF World Street Hockey Championship. Not only did you win gold there, but were named the most outstanding netminder there as well. How cool is it to go into Switzerland and take their gold from them?
Yeah, that was a great tournament as well. Just, I mean, obviously, any chance you can get to travel, and if it's somewhere like Switzerland, it gives you that extra little motivation. So, going there with Canada was awesome. Honestly, there were a lot of girls that were returning from the previous years that I'd already been teammates with, so being able to win that and getting those two tournaments in a row was awesome. Our even that tournament as well, like I've said, that the CWHL has grown. That tournament, the skill level there, as the years progress, more people get to know about it. So there's more of the like NCAA girls or CIS girls that recognize it, and then they start to play as well. So it's nice to get the the skill level go up there as well. And that being said, our semifinal game, I believe, was against Team USA, who the tournaments previous, they weren't really competitive, if I'm being honest. But that that semifinal game, I believe it went, it didn't go to overtime, but I think we won by one goal, and it was a tight game. And I know they were proud just to be able to compete at that tournament, but it was awesome that they came after the game, and they were trying to, at that game, or at those tournaments, you switch your jerseys with the other team and stuff like that. So they were trying to get all the Canada stuff, and they were just saying how they were rooting for us and stuff like that. So, no, it's a great tournament, and you get to meet a lot of new people. But, yeah, it's, and like I said, ball hockey is, it's good to, for a summer sport, to keep the kind of the hockey skills up, but then you're also getting your cardio because you can't just glide around the rink like you can with your skates on. So it's good.
Speaking of upping the talent, that team also featured Lexi Hoffmeyer, Julie Allen, Chelsea Purcell, who all played in the C for a while. Are you noticing more of the professional players now sort of dipping their toes into the ball hockey / inline hockey sort of realm just to keep skills going over the summer as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that a lot of, at least a lot of the women my age, they recognize the importance of playing more than just one sport. I know that a lot of kids growing up right now, it's just hockey, and right. Their parents spend thousands and thousands of dollars for them to play over the summer, and then they just get burned out, right? And you're not really an athlete at that point. You're just a hockey player. Whereas if you're playing other sports, ball hockey and inline is a good way to kind of switch it up a little bit, but still kind of contain the same skill level and the same skills that you would with regular hockey. But, yeah, I'm definitely seeing it picking up. I don't really know as much in the inline world. I know Elisa Baldin and Bonello from the Furies, they play in line for Team Canada, but
yeah.
I'm mostly into the ball hockey world. But yeah, seeing those girls pick it up is awesome.
Well, I mean, the only reason I ask is because speaking to Jetta Ratcliffe this past week, and she's a huge inline player. So I mean, it's interesting to see how many women are actually doing similar hockey stuff but different hockey stuff, just to see the variations there. For those that aren't aware, and I'll ask you because you're going to be an expert in this, for those that aren't aware, are there any major significant rule changes between playing ball hockey and playing ice hockey?
As far as it goes for me, it's hard to kind of transition right at the beginning from being able to slide on your butterfly to being able to just kind of have to shuffle on your knees, or it's kind of more of, as a goalie, you just have to kind of set yourself challenge and set yourself going side to side a lot harder, obviously, because you can't slide, or even post to post, you can't just shuffle across, you have to step. So it's definitely different. As far as rules, there's a floating blue line. So once you get over the blue line, you have all the way back to the red line before it's offside again. So it gives you more space. And when you get some good shooters with that ball, it curves on you. So it can be a clatter from the point, and you think you have it, and it's curving in the net beside you. So it's definitely something to get used to, but it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I'd like to see. I mean, we've covered a couple of the local ball hockey things here, and yeah, some of those shots are just vicious in terms of how much they curl away from everybody. So I can't imagine what it's like as a goaltender standing there and going, "I got this," and then seconds later, it's, "I don't got this."
Yeah, the first time I experienced it was with women was Jocelyn LaRock. So
oh, geez.
Got hers, and then I actually played against Travis Hamonic, another Manitoba boy. In ball hockey in Winnipeg as well, so obviously an NHL player, so his shot isn't terrible. So it's tough to read, but it's a lot of fun.
So you went back to the ice after that, after winning gold medal over in Switzerland, and were awed by all the mountains over there, and jumped into a fairly good Inferno squad. Where you really started to impress everybody in terms of your work ethic, in terms of your skill. You were named to the 2015-2016 All-Star Game yet again, but it would be the playoffs where you took everybody by storm. How much fun was the 2015-2016 season?
Yeah, there were definitely some ups and downs. We had a great team, obviously, but especially against Brampton. They were playing in this tiny little rink, like it was a shoebox. So it was their home rink. So they obviously were great in it. So anytime we went there, we kind of seemed to choke because it was just a lot less time and space than we were used to on even just a normal size rink. So being able to, it was actually Kat Desjardins, my backup that year, that ended up getting us the last crucial point that we needed to end up getting home ice against them, right, in the first round. So I got pulled that game, as I did a few times in Brampton that year, and she went in and finished it off for us. So getting those was crucial, and then we got to play on our big rink here in Calgary at Winsport. So there were some close games with Brampton. The best of three series, we ended up getting the first two. So it was a great series, and then it was a proud moment to be able to make it to Ottawa, which we kind of found out not too long before that we were going to be able to play the final in Ottawa that year, where at the, I guess, the Canadian Tire Center, where the Senators play.
Yeah.
So that was also a huge, huge honor to be able to do that. So
before we discuss that big game, you actually did something fairly big on February 13th, 2016. You probably don't remember this, but it was a monster sort of, I guess not monster, but sort of a milestone win, I guess, as you recorded your 30th professional win against Les Canadiens in the Do It for Darren game as the Inferno won 4-2 that night. Do you remember that game?
A little bit, yeah. I just remember we've done a few of the Do It for Darren games, and anytime you wear those, we have special jerseys. Jess Campbell, who, when she played on the team, worked for the Sheldon Kennedy Child Advocacy Center. She was the one that got those, that organized those games for us. So anytime you get to wear those special jerseys and play for a special cause, it's definitely an honor. So, but yeah, and especially against the Canadiens, they were obviously our back and forth that year. So it was nice to get that win.
But I mean, 30 is a pretty big number. I mean, you legitimately are going to have that record now for a while, from what I can see, in terms of, I mean, it increased as well. Don't get me wrong, there were still more wins after that. But 30 is a pretty big milestone for any goaltender in a professional setting in the sea right now, just because of the number of games you play and the length of time that it seems like your career spans. There's not a lot of time there where you can play, but for you to win 30 games, that shows some pretty good A, longevity in your position, and B, simply that, hey, you win a bunch of games, you're pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. And just being able to, like, the fact that we got a handful in my first year was kind of extra special. But obviously the fact that we became better as an organization, and obviously we're continuing to get better, just looking at our roster going next year, I'm just really, really happy to see where the organization is going. So obviously an honor, but I look forward to seeing it beat by the next, I guess, generation.
So you rolled into Ottawa, kind of, I'm not going to say as the underdog, but kind of as an underdog. Everybody sort of was looking at the Canadiens as being the powerhouse that year. And you went out and absolutely shocked everybody with a monster win. Describe that game for us, because it seemed like you were, I'm going to use the term that a lot of people use, but unflappable would probably be the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I think we were 2-4 against the Canadiens that year, so we definitely were the underdog. A lot of the attention was on them and Labonte specifically, so it kind of takes the pressure off your shoulders. Obviously, compared to Labonte, I'm kind of a nobody. So that having
Stop
that.
Stop it.
Well, she's just.
Sure, she's Labonte, but you're Delaney Bryan, and that's why we're talking to you.
But no, just having the pressure off her shoulders was good to start the game. I remember being extremely nervous before that game. But I guess just kind of going in being the underdogs was nice to not have that pressure. We obviously got outshot, I think almost 2-1, but we got the bounces that game, and we also were finishing on our chances. You can't say that I stole the show when it was an 8-3 game, right? Like, I made more saves than the other goalie did, but we put in 8 goals. So if I would have put in 9, then I don't know I don't know how I would have lived with that.
That's the most humble way of describing a championship victory. We got the bounces and we finished a few plays off. Like, you stoned a bunch of outstanding players / Olympians in a number of situations, Delaney. Like, you can be a little bit, you know, proud of your achievement there, because I know we are. We're like, holy crap, she's awesome.
Yeah, no, and obviously playing against the team that they were and how great that they were that year was, and being able to beat them was awesome. Even like Pumi, like I said, I've known her for probably about 12 years now, and she's one of the most humble people you'll play against. Her and Julie Chu, if she's losing, if she's winning, she still has a smile on her face no matter what, and is one of the best sports just in the game. But Pumi, like, I would make a save on her, and instead of her really being that pissed, she would like kind of give me a smile and a tap on the pad. So it was nice to have that competition, but also just that sportsmanship was great.
So the humbleness can end now, because you were also named the 2016 Clarkson Cup MVP. For somebody who said in, you know, a couple of post-game interviews, you know, we had all these great players and I don't think I deserved it, blah, blah, blah. Come on. Like, let's be honest here. You stoned one of the best teams on paper that we've ever seen and did it in fairly convincing fashion. Are you proud of being named MVP?
Yeah, for sure. Like, those are the things that after the game doesn't really matter. You're just trying to get to the trophy. So, honestly, like, I think we had four girls scored two goals each, so like, they couldn't really pick an MVP from that, because they were I think it was by default, they're like, give it to the goalie. So no, it was the cup that was the most important thing, so that's what I'm most proud about.
Yeah, no, nothing wrong with that. Good team answer there. Kind of a different role for you last season, and I'm not going to make this, you know, too difficult for you, but you've played with a couple of Team Canada goalies in Mashmeyer and Lacasse, where you were sort of seen as the number three. Last season had a couple of younger women with you anyway, in Lindsay Post and Tony Ross. What's it like sort of playing as the unknown and then going to and becoming sort of the mentor or the teacher for the next sort of line of women that are coming through?
Yeah, obviously the season with Lacasse and Mash wasn't great personally. Our team was great. I think for all three of us, like, we all wanted to be the starting goalie, right? So it's tough to have that with three of us. I knew that, well, I assumed that they would be gone for the following season for the Olympics training. So kind of just stuck it out until the following season. Tried to be a good teammate and tried to stay positive. So coming into this year, I knew Toni. She came with, when the other two the previous year were gone for a weekend, she came to Boston with us. So yeah. I actually sat beside her on the plane and got to know her a little bit and how great of a person she is. Yeah. So knowing that she was coming was exciting. Didn't really know much about Post except for that she had won with U of A. I think they won Nationals the year before that. So
they did, yeah.
Knew that she couldn't really be a schmuck in net. So she had some competition. So coming to this, yeah, obviously I'm the vet and kind of wanted to, obviously you always want to be the starting goalie, but it's not always realistic. So, but just trying to, I guess, overall, we had a new team, basically. We had just as many returners as we did newbies. So yeah. I think it was up to that kind of leadership group and the returners to let the newbies know, like, this is how it goes in Calgary. So and take pride in on the ice, but obviously all the stuff that we do off the ice. So, just didn't know what the season had in store. And then ended up getting injured for half of it anyway. So it worked out that we had three goalies in the long run.
I mean, that's a tough situation, obviously, last year with, you know, being injured and certainly not, you know, not getting a chance to play a lot of the games or whatever. But, I mean, we've had Toni on the show a couple times. She's an outstanding person, like you said. We really enjoy her. We know Lindsay from, you know, playing Manitoba against Alberta, and she's, again, just outstanding as well. But different situation now with you guys, with Toni announcing her retirement, although the team hasn't announced it yet, and you announcing your retirement. Obviously, Calgary going to be retooling, doing a little bit of goaltending improvement as they, well, I guess not improvement, but adding a couple of goaltenders anyway. Do you see Lindsay as being a, the potential number one next year?
I definitely think she has it in her. I think she needs to know that herself. I know that she's a confident goalie, but it's I don't know if it's the mental side of it, because she would have outstanding, unreal games this year, but then she would kind of let in a soft goal where I'm not saying this as the bad guy. She knows soft. Our coach would tell her, but she already knew. Like, you as a goalie, you know when you've let in a soft goal. So she would have unreal games and then let in kind of one that shouldn't have gone in. So it's just a matter of if she can keep it consistent for the entire game and at least most of the time, then I think she definitely has the potential to do great things in the league.
Speaking of unreal games, let's talk about an unreal game that you had, one of your final games, as you went to three overtimes against the person most people consider the preeminent number one goaltender in the world, and battled Nuora Ratu and Kunlun Red Star to a 0-0 tie through three periods. What's going through your mind on that one in terms of how well you're playing and how well the teams are playing in front of you?
Yeah, like I was still not too long after my injury, so I was still I knew I was ready to go, and I needed to do what I could to help my team on my end. I think we outshot them. We were outshooting them throughout the entire game, but yeah. Obviously my team, we got Breanne Jenner and Blair Turnbull back at that point, but we were still pretty much the team that we were all season, who was a lot of newbies and just a lot of great people, maybe not the most skilled, but just kind of great people, great work ethic. So I knew my team would do all they could to try to get a puck in the net, and we did. Just didn't end up going our way.
No, and I mean, we're taking nothing away from the result. I mean, don't get me wrong, three overtimes in any sport is pretty impressive to battle, again, the woman that everybody thinks is the number one goaltender in the world. But you guys gave everything and more. 66 shots is what the final tally was for Calgary, to 44 for Kunlun. So it's not like it was a game where you kind of just stood there and did nothing for half the night or anything like that, and a bad one got by you. I mean, legitimately, that last goal was incredible to see. And, I mean, you really had no chance. I'm not going to take anything away from the way you played. But you went toe-to-toe with one of the best Olympians there ever was.
Yeah, and I agree with that. But, like, she's all the way on the other end. It's the players. Well,
but it's still, you still got to make the saves, and you still got to keep your team. And that's the thing, though, is that you did it for six periods. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, Delaney, but we think you're pretty good.
I was a little worried, especially after my injury, that I wouldn't be able to come back. But there were a couple games earlier in right before that we played against Montreal, and we lost both. But I felt like I played pretty well those games. So having those under my belt before the playoffs, I think, helped. But yeah, so I wasn't sure that I was ready, but before the playoffs, or I guess just coming back, but then before that game, I knew I was, and I tried to do all I could. Unfortunately, it was kind of a shot from the side that got tipped in right before by another American Olympian. So there's, I don't know, I don't want to make excuses, but there's not much that you can do at that point. You're still, there's no no sour taste in my mouth as far as that season ended, and obviously you want to go to the final, but just the team that we had this year, couldn't be more proud of the girls.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, we're not blaming anybody. You guys battled hard and certainly gave everything you had through six periods, and I mean, we were sitting there, you know, sort of jaws on the floor going, how is she doing this? She's incredible right now. She's unconscious in terms of playing net. So no, I mean, we're not blaming anybody. We think you guys did an outstanding job, and certainly one of the most exciting games ever I've seen in women's hockey. So I mean, keep it up for the Calgary Inferno, because it should be a good season next year for you guys. Unfortunately, though, it won't include you, as you announced on July 16th, 2018, that you were hanging up the skates, at least professionally anyway. Will we see Delaney Bryan on a ball hockey court in the future winning gold medal still, or is that also...
No, that's there's potential for that. Unfortunately, nationals are happening pretty much right now in Winnipeg. I was hoping I'd be able to go again, but unfortunately I couldn't make it due to work circumstances. So definitely in the future, wherever it is next year, I'll be trying to get out there again. It's a lot easier to commit with a full work schedule to something that's kind of just a week-long or two-week-long tournament. But yeah, I'll definitely be trying to get out there again for sure.
Not just a new work commitment, but another new commitment. As I understand, you got a new puppy.
I did. I'm looking at her right now. She's snoozing and being good, so it's good. She's a handful, though.
That's all right, though. It'll keep you busy in terms of getting that going. So as we sort of close the curtain on the professional ice hockey career, 70 games played, 43 wins, 20 losses, 2 shootout / overtime losses, 5 shutouts, 256 goals against average, 896 in the regular season. In the playoffs, you upped your game, 4 wins, 6 losses. Obviously, it's not a very deep playoff run for anybody in the sea right now, but 1 shutout, 225 goals against average, and a 920 save percentage. In hearing those numbers, are you proud of what you did?
Yeah, for sure. And just again, mostly just being a part of being able to help get the program where it is right now and hopefully just continue to watch it grow as the years go on. I'll be making my appearance at their games and cheering them on for sure. So yeah, definitely proud of the organization and the league as a whole.
I don't want you to cry, and I know this may do it, but I don't want you to cry. But I understand your biggest fan is no longer with you. Your mom passed away April 2017. She was at every game. She loved watching you play. She loved watching the Inferno play. Obviously, a tough, tough time, and certainly we're not going to try and dwell on anything like that. But how big of a hero in your life was your mom?
Yeah, for sure. Her passing was kind of another reason that I wanted to play out another season this past season. So, she moved from Winnipeg for the winters to watch me play in Calgary. So,
I'm gonna say,
yeah,
you know what?
Definitely missed having her this year.
Yeah, take a second, get your, see if you. I read that story and I thought that was one of the greatest things I've ever read, that your mom was out there cheering for you. And I mean, again, I wanted to ask just how much of a hero she was, because I know she was in terms of, your biggest fan, certainly the one that was in your corner the whole time. So, without any doubt, I know that's, a tough, tough thing to go through, and certainly you have, you have our condolences on the passing of your mom, but I think that says a lot, though, just how important, parents are in terms of getting kids to where they are today in terms of playing higher-level hockey as well.
Yeah, and definitely, like I said, there's the parents that maybe do too much as far as hockey all year long and paying all this money. And she was really good at getting me into other sports and other things to build me as an athlete as a whole, so... that's one of the things I'm most thankful for, I guess.
She is a heck of a mom. I'm going to ask you a couple of quick, fun questions to sort of lighten the mood a little bit before we let you go here. What's your puppy's name?
It's Riley.
Oh, Riley. There you go.
Yeah.
I understand that you were involved in the Calgary Pride Parade as one of the members of the Inferno that was marching in the parade. How much fun were those parades for you?
Yeah, they were awesome. I actually couldn't make this past season this past parade last year because I was traveling, but just being invited out to those, and we walk alongside, well, I guess for the Stampede Parade, we walked alongside the Stampeders and the Flames and the Hitmen. So any time that we can get our jerseys and our logo out there to better educate the city about who we are and that we're actually here and we're actually pretty good hockey players. it's a good opportunity for sure.
A little bit of a fun thing. What is a pregame meal for Delaney Bryan, depending on what sport she's playing?
Oh, I don't. Like, I do have my superstitions, but that's not one that's kind of set in stone.
Okay, that's fair.
Like, the safe answer is always say chicken and pasta or chicken and rice, something like that. But, yeah, nothing that I have to have before every meal or before every game.
That's fair. Now that you're not playing anymore, do you want to describe any of those superstitions?
Just little things like, when I get to the rink, I'll lay my pads out in front of my stall, and if people knock them or kick them or anything like that, it kind of irks me a bit. don't let people wear my equipment. It's, first of all, it's gross. Like, my stuff smells so bad. You don't want to put your hands in that anyway. So, like, when people try to ask me to switch, I'm like, you don't want to put that on, trust me. So, just little stuff like that. There's obviously, like, the in-game stuff. I'll squirt a little bit of water out of my water bottle before I'll take a sip, kind of, first of all, just to make sure that there's water in there still, but it's just obviously a superstition thing.
Sure, no, that's fair. Does your number have any significance in terms of the number you wore?
30 doesn't. I was number one my entire life up until the Inferno because of Sammy Cho Small.
Ah!
Yeah, she was my hero all growing up. Same city, obviously, in Winnipeg, and same... I grew up in St. Boniface mostly, but St. Vitale as well. I played for the St. Vitale Vicks, and she did as well as a junior player. So she was my hero growing up. But when I got to the Inferno, number one was already taken by Kat Desjardins, unfortunately, and she actually ended up leaving my second season. But being superstitious, I didn't want to change after I'd already been number 30. So
that's fair, yeah.
Yeah, number one mostly my whole life for first time, and who knows that.
does it hit home when you're invited to Sammy Joe Small's hockey school as an instructor?
Yeah, so my roommate Warner went to Sammy's camps growing up. I actually never ended up going to them, but she went to the camps growing up, and then she ended up being an instructor. And then that summer, or that year during the season, she got Sammy to send me like a little note and pictures and stuff, and I just thought that was like the best thing ever. And then she asked me if I wanted to instruct at her camp, and I was like, still, I was fangirling because it's Sammy Jo Smalls. But when you get to know her and you get to know how awesome of a person she is and how much she's done for the sport and the C-Dub in specific as well, like, or specifically as well. So, yeah, any chance that I can make it out, I try to work for camps. Unfortunately, I couldn't this year. But yeah, it's a great experience with her and Billy Bridges. It's just an unreal week for sure.
Last opportunity here on our show anyway, Delaney, to say anything you want. We'll give you the soapbox. You can talk about anything, say anything, promote anything, anything you want to do before we let you go here.
Just, I guess, for anybody out there who isn't really a supporter of or isn't really aware of the CWHL, it's definitely next season, definitely the league to get into it, or the year to get into it, because we've got some great players coming into the league, and just try to support any way you can. Buy tickets, buy merchandise. It's the women out there that they're playing for, again, paid a little bit now, but they're playing for the love of the sport. So just hopefully people and fans, they recognize that.
Delaney Bryan, I cannot say thank you enough for giving us this time today. I'm going to be honest with you. Door is always open. If you ever want to come back, if you want to stop in, if you ever are in Winnipeg, by all means, feel free to drop by, and we will happily have you as a featured guest on our show once more. You are incredible, and we will go to our graves saying that about you, that you are an incredible human being, a great hockey player, but a better human being for sure.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me. And definitely, I don't know really when the next time I'll be in Winnipeg, but hopefully we can catch up another time for sure.
That's absolutely going to happen for sure, because we want to talk to you again. But again, thank you again, Delaney. Have a great day. Good luck in the future. And we'll be cheering from afar, at least for now, as you're still in Calgary, from what I understand. So we'll cheer from afar as to whatever your next step is in terms of life. But you got fans out here in Winnipeg for sure.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too. Take her easy.
All right, bye.
So there is Delaney Bryan. I'm going to get out of here right away, folks. As I said, if you want to catch up with me on Twitter about that interview, by all means, hit me up at TeebsHBIC, and we will talk there. Going to get out of here because I got Skippy waiting for me to get out of this chair here right now as Free Range Radio coming up right away for you here. Stay tuned for that, folks. Coming up in the next second or two, I owe him a big thanks for letting me in to do that interview and play it a little bit longer. He's awesome that way. So, Skippy, all yours now in terms of getting on there. It's Hockey Show for another week, everybody, here on 101.5 UMFM.